Welcome to Awaken Calls. Every Saturday, we host conversations with guest speakers from all walks of life. Speakers whose personal journeys awaken and inspire our innate spirit of service. Thank you for coming together to plant seeds for a more compassionate society.
Welcome again to our weekly Awaken Call. Today in conversation with Anne Bay. And here's how our call is going to work. In a few moments, I'm going to introduce our moderator, Audrey Lynn, and we will engage in a deep dialogue with Anne. And then at the top of the hour, we'll open the lines for a question and answer and circle of sharing. And we're during this time, we'll invite your reflections and your questions. So jumping into our theme today, the theme is the art of making the mundane magical, and I'm going to toss it over to you, Audrey, to get us started.
Yeah, thank you, Nicole, and thank you for this call. I'm so excited to hear more from Anne. So just to share a bit about Anne, I'm guessing you probably read a bit about her, but I think one of the things many of us can attest to is her smiling eyes. And you know, the first thing you notice when you see Anne or when you meet her is that she has these incredible, bright, shining eyes. And she's just this incredible force of love. I remember just going back to that kindness circle day or that kindness day, she had made these, like, you know, she bought like 200 gratitude cards. It's 200, like, you know, nice colored pieces of paper, and she spent the whole week before, you know, cutting each one and stamping it a little bit and putting, you know, a ribbon, tying a ribbon around it, and doing all this beautiful stuff. And then she comes in, she says, "Oh, I was only able to do, you know, about 50 of them," and that's kind of the way she is. She sees everything with that sense of wanting to just offer herself, wanting to give of herself above and beyond in so many ways. And, you know, she's an artist, she's an art curator, she's a mother of two beautiful children and a wife, and really a seeker in many ways. And she interviews, you know, beautiful souls for, our Works in Conversation magazine and on these Awaken Calls. And she bakes these amazing brownies and banana bread, and then in bulk, and she just, you know, gifts it to people with on such a beautiful plate or such beautiful, like, arrangements. You can really tell that she has that artist spirit. She's also, you know, been working on this beautiful film, and just really, in a way, in some ways, you know, you could describe her as this eternal optimist, but not the kind of optimist that's like just light on the surface. And she's an eternal optimist in the sense that she stays real and she stays raw during challenging moments, you know, whether it's the passing of a family member or, you know, whether she's just lighting a candle and, you know, sending love to people and going through difficulties, or just showing up for friends whose ages range from, you know, in their teenage years to, you know, 90s. and just during any time, for their hour of need or just to show up. And that's just the spirit that she carries. So, Anne, we're so excited that you finally agreed to join us on this call. I know there's been, like, an Anne for Awaken Call group for a while. So we're so glad that the day has finally come to get to hear a bit more of your journey. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Audrey. And, you know, it's such a joy, and it's a gift for me to be on this call. And I can just feel all the noble friends all around the world. And each of these calls is such a gift, because we just get to, you know, be in a circle together, you know, whether it's physically at an awaken or on an awaken call. It just is, it's just such a sacred space. And thank you, Nicole and Audrey, for nurturing that and inviting me to share today. And I did just want to share with the beautiful story of the pomegranate that all unfolded because Mark, you know, blessed me that morning with this unexpected visit. And not only did he bring that beautiful pomegranate that had this beautiful smile in it, you know, it was kind of cracking mm-hmm. open, a gorgeous smile. He brought these beautiful oranges from an orange tree that he had planted 30 years ago, and beautiful lemons from a lemon tree that was now growing next to the orange tree. So, you know, the amount of love and the amount of care that you know, even arrived at our home that morning to bring these gifts was just so extraordinary. And actually, after he brought the oranges and lemons, he said, and I shared with him that I was preparing to go to this beautiful kindness day at a middle school. He said, "Oh, wait, I'll be right back." And he runs back to his truck and he comes back with a pomegranate. And he said, "I'd like to offer this for the kindness day." So I really was just an instrument to bring, you know, his, you know, beautiful energy, beautiful love into that day. So, you know, gratitude to Mark and as Nicole, you shared, like, all the invisible beauty and that's around us always. We just get to tap into it.
You're an instrument of many things, Anne. thank you. I think the first question that I'd love to start with is, you know, around your shining eyes, everyone wants to know the secret to them. And I thought maybe let's start with your childhood. And I know you grew up in California and then moved to the East Coast in your teens. So I'm curious, you know, where did your sense of art and your ability to see and create beauty out of such small, ordinary things come from? And I know you might not even consider it a quality that you carry, but where did you start to see the magic in everyday life? Was it, you know, influenced by your family or your teachers or mentors? Where was that? Was that, or was that not there in your childhood? Where do you think?
It's amazing the images that kind of come to me when you ask that question. And what comes to me immediately is in my childhood, I go right back to our childhood home in Los Gatos, where we lived for, you know, my first 13 years. And my mom had this beautiful garden, and the garden has always been, actually became a refuge. I didn't realize how important the garden was to me until probably a little bit when I was, you know, maybe in elementary years. But the beginning, I was so blessed, as you know, my first teacher in school was Betty Peck. And she is, as you know, 94 and just a force of love and is still living in the same home and garden that she did when I was in her class as a six-year-old. And she was, you know, I remember her so vividly going to school in the morning, and she would always be dressed in this beautiful long skirt, and her hair would be up, and she would have this beautiful white blouse, and she just had this welcome, like you come in and her arms would be open and there's just this welcoming, and she'd always play the zither and music, and everything was just magical. And even though it was a public school and there wasn't much greenery around, she found the beauty in everything. I mean, she would take us out into the weeds and teach us about wheat and how the importance of making bread and how to make bread. And she just found beauty in everything. And, you know, as I reflect back on my childhood, I feel so grateful that she planted those seeds in me, because when I look back, I think, wow, you know, my refuge has really been in the garden and in nature. And when I was going through, I think it was in fifth grade, I had a very difficult year, just as a many things happened. You know, when things happen, they kind of happen all at once. But my mother was diagnosed with cancer, and at that point, the doctors, you know, diagnosed her as terminal cancer. And my beloved fifth grade teacher had passed away unexpectedly one morning, and it was just devastating to me. And, you know, it was just, you know, a dear friend of mine kind of had, you know, I felt like I'd lost a group of friends I was with, and just all these just kind of different events happened. And it was the first time I felt really alone in the world. And it was a really difficult time, but what I realized is there was something inside me that realized I'm going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay. And I found an inner resilience that was, you know, I realize now was really a gift, even though it's hard to, you know, to live through difficult periods. There was also this knowing that I knew inside that, I don't know, somehow it was going to be okay and I was protected. And going in the garden was just a place where I would go and I would spend hours. And I would, my you know, kind of chore at home was to water the garden. And so I just delighted in spending hours in our garden. And we had a big garden. There was, you know, boxes of different beautiful flowers. My mom had a vegetable garden, this old apricot tree, which we'd make apricot jam. So it was, even though it was maybe, you know, not you know, maybe a quarter of an acre, but it felt like it went on for forever and ever.
Wow. And you were, you know, like, great when you discovered this inner resilience.
You know, it's, yeah, and I, you know, it's funny because it's, you know, sometimes, you know, it's, you know, say have smiling eyes, and I remember you shared with me, Audrey, that Min had shared in a circle that she asked me what was kind of behind my smiling eyes, and my answer was pain. And I you know, it's so interesting when, you know, life brings challenges to you, and I realized. I don't know if I realized when I was young, but I realized as, you know, as I've gotten older that there are beautiful opportunities. And another teacher I look to, who I never met, is Peace Pilgrim, but I just love her. I love her writings. I really feel moved by her, her inner knowing that to take that, to be able to walk for peace. And to know just that it was something that she had to listen to and surrender to. And, you know, through our lives, we, you know, learn to surrender in different ways, and different challenges will kind of invite that surrender. So I always kind of look at challenges as, okay, what am I going to learn? This is a learning. This is a teaching. And even though it's uncomfortable, okay, bring it on. Here I am.
I think it's so beautiful too in your story that, you know, how you kind of retreated to the garden sanctuary or your mom's garden. And I'm just thinking about how much you've kind of, you know, the relationship that you have with nature, and how much I've learned from just witnessing, you know, the way that you notice things in nature. And like, even just, you know, you formed a special relationship with hawks in your neighborhood, and, you know, and just the way that you notice the redwoods. And can you just share a little bit about that?
Yeah. Well, I have to, you know, also, another beautiful teacher of mine has been Steve Carlin, who is the founder of this beautiful wildlife sanctuary in Half Moon Bay. And the first time I met Steve was actually a service-based gathering that John Malloy and Pavi and Vera had put together to kind of introduce us to the beautiful work that he is doing. And I remember arriving on the land of the sanctuary and just feeling like, oh my gosh, I feel like this is so familiar. I feel like I'm home, and you know, yet I'd never been there before. But there was just this, you know, kind of, what is this? Why do I feel this way? And I think what I was tapping into is that land was just so, it was happy. It was healthy. It had, mm-hmm. you know, when Steve talks about the land, it was, you know, Native Americans had, it was, you know, had, it was a ceremonial place where he had found many, many objects and mortars from the Native American Indians. And, you know, he has them in his home there for everyone to see. And he also is, you know, brings animals that have been injured in the wild who can no longer survive in the wild. When he brings them to the sanctuary, he goes through this beautiful ritual of saying, I'm so sorry that you can no longer survive in the wild, but while you are here, all your needs will be met. We will love you. We will feed you. We will care for you. And all we ask is that you be a teacher. And so there's this beautiful relationship, not only to the land, but to the animal kingdom. And there's this relationship, and I feel like that nurture relationship with human and animals in the land creates this health and this vibrancy. And so I feel like I tap into that. I'm learning to listen more. And, you know, even with the redwoods, I'll wake up when I wake up and I feel a little out of sorts, I'll do one of two things. I'll either go out and do a random act of kindness because that always brings me back to my heart, or I'll take a walk we're so blessed because we live in Mill Valley, and so we have trails right from our home right to the mountain, Mount Cam, and very sacred mountain. So I'll walk, usually I walk down to, we have this beautiful cascade called Cascade Falls, and through the creek, and I'm sure it was very ceremonial, sacred land by the Miwok at some point, because you can just feel it in the rocks and the boulders, and I'll just walk really slowly, and I'll just kind of just take everything in, and it's just, I come back home. I just come back home. And one day I was walking down this beautiful trail to Cascade Falls, and just so grateful to just to you know, be quiet and just to sit with the trees and next to the waterfall. And all of a sudden I just got this sense like, come up the hill. And I thought, what? Mm-hmm. Okay. So I look up the hill and there's a circle of redwoods, they're like young redwoods. Maybe 50 years old or less. And so I kind of hike up to the redwoods, and there's this like little natural opening, and I kind of, you know, kind of greet them and a bow, and I walk in, and there, right at the base of one of the redwoods, is this huge heart rock. I mean, huge. I mean, it's probably 25, 30 pounds. It's just gigantic. And it's just sitting there. And I just start to giggle, like, oh my gosh, it's so beautiful. So I just, yeah. I just sat in the kind of embrace, of these young redwoods, and just, you know, and just kind of felt embraced, felt, this kind of joy. But it was like playful, like totally playful. And it sounds crazy, but another time I went to visit the redwoods and I was sitting in their embrace again, I looked up and there was no wind. I mean, it was a very quiet, beautiful day. And the redwoods started swaying. And I was, no way, this is not possible. And they were dancing. So I just took my arms around them and I just swayed with them. And I thought, you know, I am so happy, you know, and that, you know, those moments sustain me. And I just feel so grateful to be alive. And it's just really clear to me that it is a blessing to be in this human body. And our journey here on Earth is brief. And while we're here, I just want to to just have gratitude for all these moments, because they're just blessings.
Beautiful. Wow. So beautiful images in that. I think going back to the wildlife sanctuary, I know that you've been, for the last several years now, you've been, visiting quite a bit and, you know, filming, working on a film with a friend around the, you know, the program with the youth and the sanctuary in general. Can you share a bit about how that came about? And,
Well, for that first blessed day where we gathered as a service space with Steve, and he shared a story about Susie Bear, his most profound teacher. And I remember I was listening to him share the story, and I was so, so deeply moved. And after that day, and I'm just usually really shy. Like, I don't usually do this, but I found, like, I have to talk to Steve. I need to call him and tell him about this story, because it just touched me so deeply. So I called him, and I said, Steve, I'm so moved by the story you shared about Susie Bear. And, you know, these are healing stories, and we need them in the world. We need these stories. And would you be okay if there's some way I could work with you to share these stories in the world? And I remember he said really directly, he said, Ann, you're a facilitator, of course. And I thought, what? I am? But it was this beautiful, like, yes, like, you know. So I went down that next, I don't know, maybe a couple of weeks, I went down to visit him. And Christianitis and Pavi joined me in many of these visits, and we would go down, and I would bring my recorder, and we would just record Steve in conversation about, you know, the stories of the animals and his journey. And I was just, you know, I found myself coming down more and more, and the blessing was, it was just, you know, what was so, I guess I just wanted to share what was the beauty of that was, just even picking up Chris at the BART station on the way down, and the conversation that Chris and I would have, and this space of, I just, you know, have to just share this sense of noble friendship that, you know, these opportunities just kind of arise, and we just say yes, and all of a sudden we're, our journeys come together, and then, you know, Pavi and Chris and I are asking questions, and each of us have different questions to ask, but it's just so beautiful how everything just kind of unfolds naturally. And then one day, Rajesh, who is a dear friend and filmmaker, was down, and he also was equally moved by the sanctuary and Steve and the work with the youth on the sanctuary. So he offered to make a small, like, film or anything to support the sanctuary's work in the world. And so we were both there at a day when John had his middle school program happening, and we were just, you know, walking with the kids and Rajesh just, and we didn't know each other at all. He just looked, he said to me, you know, you're really connected here. And I said, yeah, I feel really, really, you know, really blessed. I love it here. I love coming here. He said, well, I'm, you know, working on a film. Do you want to help me? And I said, sure, if it can be a service, of course. And so we just started to, you know, come down to the sanctuary and to film together. And he taught me how to do the sound work. And we were probably working for a couple of months before he even knew that I was a curator or anything about me. I mean, it was just something that it was just, for me, it was this beautiful teaching of you just say yes, and it was just so natural. It just felt so the right thing to do, and it was so beautiful because this, from the very beginning, the intention of creating this film was as a gift. It was like, how do we share the beauty that we had been gifted to be here at this time? How do we pay forward this gift? And so it's been this amazing, I don't know how to put it in words, but I feel like the intention was set, so even before we got there, that is just unfolding the way it needs to unfold. And now it's been 3 years, and in a way you'd say, wow, that takes a long time to make a film, but the relationships that we've developed with the children and the families and with John and with Steve and with the animals have allowed the film to be what it needs to be, and we'll know when it's done. We'll know, and I think that's, again, the listening that I'm trying to really be sensitive to, is it's so beyond us that we're, you know, it's just, I hope that we're, you know, that we just listen to when it's right. And I know, we'll know it's when it's right.
Yeah. Can you share a bit about the, you know, the students and the, are there any moments within that process, that bigger process, and maybe filming these kids that, you know, are going through a really, you know, powerful process there? Can you share, are there any moments or any students or any people that, you know, stand out to you from that experience?
Yeah, a couple. Three students stand out to me, and all of them we met when they were in seventh grade. So they were like 11, 12. And Samantha's one. And I remember we had just started filming some of the students, and they were just really sweet interviews where we'd ask them, we'd join the circle with John and the students around the fire, and John is so wonderful and how he he just introduces us and the work, and the kids were so beautiful. I remember the first circle we joined with the kids, this one boy, Nicholas. We were walking toward the circle, and I was thinking, oh, I don't know where I'm going to sit down. Let's see. And Nicholas just steps up, opens up the circle, and then has this chair ready for me to sit. And it was so beautiful. And the children just blow me away, and their love and their openness. And the children that are part of this program have gone through, you know, really, they've had difficult lives. And, you know, what they've experienced in their short lives has been, you know, very challenging. But when they're around the circle and the fire, and they've created the fire, it's just this beautiful healing space. So when John said, yeah, if you want to ask some of the kids if they're willing to be interviewed, sure. And so we, you know, I remember Samantha came out and she sat down, and she was so, she was so nervous in the sense that she's just, you know, she's just kind of anxious, you know, but she, once we start asking her questions about the sanctuary, she just would just kind of calm down and just speak about her love of Thunder the horse, and how when she arrived at the sanctuary, you know, how she just wanted to see Thunder, and her whole face just would, you know, just get bright, and her eyes would get so big, and they would talk so articulately about what they have been experiencing. And she has been raised in a mobile home, and her parents have separated. And so it's she talked about how there's no greenery, there's no trees, it's just you know, cars and just pavement everywhere. And when she comes to the sanctuary, she feels free. I want to live where there's green, where there's trees. I want to live just like Steve. I want to live in just like here. I never want to leave. And there's a sense of freedom and comfort and just being home. And what Rajesh and I were so blown away is the children felt so comfortable with us, you know. And I don't know how to share it other than to say, you know, I felt such deep gratitude that these children could feel comfortable and share really from their soul. And so, you know, it's just they set the tone for how the film is, you know, unfolding with such deep reverence. And then there's another beautiful young man, Marvin, who was really, when he started again, he was very shy. He always had a hood over his his head and looked down and was very quiet. And I remember thinking, Marvin is more comfortable in silence. That's where he's, that's his comfort. And I understand that. I feel I was a lot like that when I was young. And so I was just always, I don't know, I had just a particular fondness for Marvin. And John was beautiful because John would know how to hold each child and how to inspire their deepest gifts. And with Marvin, he nurtured this, you know, leadership that within Marvin, but it was just, you know, he had gone through a very difficult time. And so Marvin was, I think his healing happened around a condor, Andean condor, Vidor, who has a wingspan of, you know, 9 or 10 feet. And he's this really beautiful condor, huge. And when John and Steve will share with the kids, when they are respectful and ready, they will have the privilege to walk into the sanctuary, into the enclosures, and spend time with Vidor. And Steve will say to the children, he'll say, if any of you have a question that no human being can answer, you can ask Vidor. And he will respond to you. But when he will respond, you have to listen. And you'll know if he responds to you. And so Marvin shares about that space with Vidor, and that he asked Vidor, is it worth living? Is it worth me living here? And is it going to get better? And he said, Vidor answered him in the silence, and that Marvin learned that in the power of silence. And so what is happening at the sanctuary is so profound on so many levels, and the children, not only do they heal and learn how to trust, because animals don't lie, so they learn to trust. They learn the backstories of the animals. They identify with that, and they have time to heal. And then they heal, and then they take it back to their families, and they heal their families. And we have seen this over and over, and it's extraordinary. I think our greatest teachers are our children. Yeah. And when you create a circle where they feel safe, it's incredible, the kind of healing. And for me, it was, you know, the sanctuary became a really powerful healing place for me. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Where does your, in all these stories and just knowing you, you have this, amazing connection with youth, and you just have this like impulse to just want to support them in such deep ways, whether they're, you know, your own children or, you know, or just any children really. where does that impulse come from? Where does that, where does that rise up from inside of you?
I didn't realize how much that I was just, how much I really like children. I love all children. I love children. And I think I've always, I don't know, it's so hard to find words around this, but when, you know, having two of my own, Emily and Peter, it's you know, being a mother is such a gift, and mm-hmm. It's really humbling. It's so humbling, and both Emily and Peter have been incredible teachers to me. Emily has been a teacher in that when she was really, really young, she was very shy, and she had a hard time. Whenever we'd get together, little baby groups, she would always kind of cling to my leg. And mm-hmm. I realized I couldn't push her. And when she said yes, she meant yes. And when she said no, she really meant no. And I really listened to her when she was really young that way. And throughout her life, she's been such a teacher to me, because when she says yes, she is really clear. It's a yes. And when mm-hmm. she is no, it's not ready. And I trust the no is, there's wisdom behind that no. And with Peter, he is my little, he keeps me honest. And he sees things so clearly, and he'll just say, like, I remember when he was little, he said, "Mommy, you always say it'll be 5 minutes. It's never 5 minutes, you know," and he would cry, like, and he was right. I would say, "Oh, I'll be there in 5 minutes," but then I'd find something else to do and I'd get distracted. And he was devastated because I was not being honest. And so he said, "Mommy, you're lying." And I said, "No, I'm not." And then I realized, oh my gosh, Peter, you're right. I am. You are absolutely right. And I am so sorry. I wasn't 5 minutes. I was much longer than that. And I'm going to really pay attention to that. And he's always been that for me. He always catches me. And I just, and it's so beautiful because he's, you know, they're so loving, but they see so clearly. They're so much closer to the truth that, you know, it's been a humbling journey. So, you know, I love being with youth because they're just so vibrant. Their life force is so beautiful. And when you are with a child, and especially when it's in that circle of you know, that sacred space of there's trust and there's openness, they'll invite you into their heart and you into theirs, and there's nothing like that. There's nothing like that.
Hmm.
Yeah,
that's true. I'm curious. I want to switch gears a bit from your description as a mom to your experience with your own mom, and you mentioned it a bit before earlier in the call, but I know that she had passed away a little over a year ago, so not when you were in fifth grade, but years later, and you were with her in her last days. And I know that when you describe witnessing your experience with her during that time, there's such a sense of surrender and, you know, care for your family and all the, you know, all the things that come with such a transition. But it's been incredibly inspiring to kind of hear about your process in that. So I'm curious, you know, what is, you know, speaking of you as a mom and what you've learned from your children, what have you learned from your own mother and or from her passing?
Yeah, thank you for asking about her. Yeah, my mother, is a very, very strong woman. She's just amazing, because she was 31 when she was diagnosed with cancer, and at that time she had Hodgkin's, so it was in her lymph nodes and it was throughout her whole body, and the doctor, you know, she had four children. I'm the second of four. And at that time she had just a 1-year-old, you know, my brother John. And she said to the doctor, "You have to keep me alive until my son is 10. You have to keep me alive." And she was just determined. And so it was, the doctors always would laugh when they'd see her, because they would say, "Oh, here comes Mary. She's indestructible." And, you know, she lived 44 years after that diagnosis. And,
wow.
And she never, I mean, and she had, you know, a lot of health issues through that time, but she never complained, not once. And she just had this incredible strength to live. And, she wasn't the kind of mother who was really, you know, warm and fuzzy. She was very intellectual, a beautiful reader. And so when she was, you know, when it was clear that the cancer had come back, and it was, you know, clear that she was, you know, her life was, it was, you know, she wasn't going to have much longer to live. I remember I flew back to Florida where my parents were living, and I remember it was just a hard time. And so I decided, mm-hmm. I'm going back to serve. I'm going to just clean the house, and I'm just going to make every, you know, whatever I can do, however I can serve, I'm just going to serve. And, mm-hmm. And so I arrived, and I'm so grateful for service space and this beautiful community, because it's taught me so much about, you know, not having any strings attached, but literally just being in service with a full heart. And so one day my mom had these, you know, her feet were really gnarled, her toes, and so I said, I'd love to just massage your feet. Why don't we just, you know, I'll just bathe them and I'll massage them. And usually she'd say no, you know, and she said, okay. And I said, all right. So I, you know, got her sitting on a chair and I put her feet in a bath and I started to massage her feet. And she said, oh, Anne, this feels so good. And she just started to soften. And it was so beautiful because I just was just holding her feet and massaging. And all of a sudden she started to share all this, you know, difficult times in her life where just, you know, with her own mother and I mean, just like people that just anything that was just difficult just started to come out, you know, almost like it just, she just had to talk and let it all come out. And so she, as she did, I was really clear that I was just there to listen. I didn't need to say anything. I just listened. And it was the most intimate moment I've really ever had with my mom. And afterward, she thanked me. And there was just this opening. And then since that time, I go back and, you know, spend, you know, a week or 2 weeks at a time. And she would, you know, she'd just invite me in a little bit more. And then when she was passing, we were so blessed. My three siblings and I were able to spend the last 2 weeks with my parents, with my mom before she passed. So we were together for those 2 weeks. And and I remember one night my father came in like 3 a.m. and my sister and I were staying in the bedroom next door, and he said, I'm not sure your mom is breathing. And he was really scared. So we got up and we went in, and she was breathing fine. She was very peaceful. But the first moment when I jumped out of bed, I could just feel this incredible prayer energy. I just felt like, and I said to my father, I said, oh my goodness, Dad, can you feel this? We are so held. I can feel the prayers. I can feel the prayers, Dad. And it was the most profound. I mean, I can just feel it now, you know, that we have no idea how held we are. And I said, not only is Mom being held, we are being held. And we just had this moment where my sister and my father and I just hugged each other. And it was just, it was these moments of grace where you can't even, there's, you know, you just have to surrender to the beauty, to the grace of life. And that, that week, those 2 weeks were so beautiful because the, you know, four of us children, we go in and we just stay with my mother. And then everyone was like, do you have everything you need? Can I make you lunch? And there was so much love and so much, and my mom was just, her passing was so beautiful. She was, you know, even to the night before, she passed, or 2 nights before she passed, it was my brother's birthday, and he was so concerned that she was going to die on his birthday. And I'm like, oh, no way, Mom would not do that, Jim. Don't worry. So, like, I made him his favorite cheese pie, which was my mom's recipe when he was little. I've never made it before. It was something my mom used to make my brother when he was young. So we made her famous cheese pie, and we brought it into her room, and we sang happy birthday, and my mother was just, her face was just light, and she was smiling, and you know, and this is 2 days before she's passing, and she did not like pictures. She hated her picture being taken, but I don't know where I got the courage, but I said, Mom, would it be okay if I got a picture of you and Jim together? And she said, yes, with this beautiful smile. So he sat, you know, with my mom, and I took a picture. And that picture of my mom and my brother is the most beautiful picture of them they've ever had. It is extraordinary. Mm-hmm. And she just let us in. And she passed her last words. She was with my father when she passed. And her last words to him were, I love you. And then she just, her heart stopped. And so it was, it was just a, it was, I can't tell you the blessings. And for me also, she invited me in, where I, you know, as I said, she wasn't really kind of, you know, huggy and close that way. But in the last 2 weeks, she allowed me to bathe her and clean her. I slept in her room the last, you know, several nights. I slept in her room all night. So I was with her 24/7. And she kept always thanking me. You know, I have to wake her up in the middle of the night to give her a pill, and she would say, "Thank you for waking." I'm like, "Oh, Mom, of course. Are you kidding?" I'm so grateful to be here. Thank you for letting me be here with you. And so these, you know, as a mother and child, you know, it's profound to lose your mother, the one, you know, who brings you in the world, and it's, you know, but since she's passed, I feel her. And even like a week after she passed, I was in my cottage and I was meditating, and I just got this really strong, like, kind of visit from her. I was like, and I could feel her saying, "Ann, you go, girl, you go, girl." And I was like, "Oh my God, Mom, really?" So, you know, it's so beautiful, you know, it's like, get these gifts, you know, it's just extraordinary.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. I'm wiping tears away from my eyes. Such a beautiful story. And I want to invite our audience in to share in some of more of these stories and ask any questions. I know I have several. And Audrey, do you have any? Do you have a final question you'd like to ask before we jump into that?
Yeah, I can definitely ask. You know, Anne is, I'm listening to you, and I don't think I've heard, you know, this full description of the way you're describing it, but it's so sacred in the way that you describe your relationship, and also it's such a, you take yourself out of it in a lot of ways, and the way that you share your experience with your mom, it's almost like you're this other, you know, that you're just, you know, convening at this point in time and then on your way to wherever else. And I'm curious, you know, did you have any religious or spiritual influences in your life as you were growing up, or, you know, or even as an adult? Like, where is your sense of, you know, I mean, there's so many questions of existence and the life beyond, but like, where is your, you know, what is your orientation to that and influences of that, and maybe how have you explored that in your adulthood?
Well, I was raised a Catholic, and I remember we would go to church every Sunday, and at our church, the sermon was always like an hour. It was a really, really long sermon, and usually it wasn't very interesting. So I found that I would just kind of go in and be quiet during those times, and I used to love going to church just for that time. And I realized later in my life that when I started to, you know, kind of be curious about meditation, I realized, oh, that's what I was doing all those years. I was just sitting in silence. And so that has always, I feel like my path is definitely a devotional path, that I really feel the presence of something greater. And what I love is that it's a path of deep listening. So it's not like I prescribe to something, or I think I just am very open, and I've had different experiences, you know, many times like in nature, or that have just really allowed me to really listen deeply and trust that inner voice and that inner knowing. I think it was really like a big push happened when I was, Emily was just a little girl. She was like 3, and a dear friend of mine, Cammy, also had a 3-year-old. We, you know, raised our children together, and her daughter was diagnosed with a very rare form of cancer, and And so at three, she was, you know, she had a neuroblastoma, so it's very hard to survive. And little Devin was, you know, she only lived for 6 months. But during those 6 months, we would go into the hospital to visit her. And I just found myself being there with Cammie and Devin throughout. And Emily and I were with her throughout her whole 6 months. And we would go to the hospital. And I remember, you know, Emily was such a beautiful teacher to me at this time, because one day Devin, you know, she saw Emily and she said, "I don't want Emily here. Tell her to go." And she was like, you know, she did not want us there. And Emily just looked at her with these big, beautiful eyes, and she said, "It's okay, Devin. I can come back anytime." And she just was like that, you know. And when Devin passed, Emily had a birthday right afterwards, and she said, "Mommy, I want to invite Cammie to my birthday party." And I said, "Sure." And she's like, and that morning she looked out her window and she said, Mommy, look, there's Devin. She's in the trees." And I said, "She is?" And she said, "Yeah." And she's wearing a rainbow. She's wearing a rainbow. She's rainbow wings. And because Devin always loved pink. But she said, "No, she's not pink. She's wearing rainbow wings." And, you know, it's just, I just listened, and like, you know, Emily sees what I can't see. But it's, you know, she's in that realm. She's open. And so that period taught me so much about love, and that Devin spirit. She came in with fire and she left. Her life was very brief, but what she was able to do was extraordinary. And she really set me on my spiritual path in terms of deeply kind of questioning and like, how do I want to show up every day, you know? And Devin, you know, I remember Cammie saying they were going to the grocery store, and Devin was really sick, so Cammie was holding Devin and had all her groceries and was trying to get the cart to the car, and this woman asked, "Oh, may I help you?" And she said, "Oh, no, it's okay." And Devin just so lovingly said to her mother, "Mommy, she wants to help you. Let her." And, you know, how, you know, Devin was such a beautiful teacher. And, you know, I think of Devin every day. And Devin had a dog. She wanted a dog, so they adopted Helen, this black Labrador. And after Devin passed away, they had a hard time with taking care of Helen, so she'd come to our house all the time. And one day, Cammie said, "You know, I think, you know, we decided that we'd love for your family to have Helen." And so Helen became a really powerful teacher to me, just like Susie Bear to Steve. Helen was my first teacher, and it was very, very clear to me that she was my teacher. So it's beautiful how we, you know, we never really know on this path, like, who our teachers are. And, you know, I just feel really grateful to just keep listening. And I trust the teachers that will appear. They'll, when I'm ready, they'll appear. And they'll always surprise me, you know. It's, you know, was a yoga teacher at one point. This beautiful young yoga teacher was a beautiful teacher to me that really helped me learn meditation and just open to that deeper space. So I feel really grateful, really, really grateful.
So beautiful, mm-hmm. Anne. I wrote down three questions, and I think you answered all three. But I'm going to repeat a few of them, because they might bring something else out. From an outside perspective, from my just, you know, not being in the Bay Area and getting to kind of be in the day to day, but hearing all these stories, it just seems that you have this flow and this trust to follow your intuition and your heart, to really follow your yeses as well as your nos, which I've heard you kind of mention a couple of times. And I'm wondering, I can hear through all your stories how you've gotten to that place up to now. And I'm just wondering if it's meditation or another design that you have that helps you to continue to cultivate that in your life today.
Hmm. Well, it's funny. The first memory, the first thought that came to me was this moment when I was with Richard Whitaker, who's just a beloved friend and who's also a very beloved friend of service space. Right. And I remember spending the morning at his home. We were looking at his photography and we were talking about, I don't know, just everything. And I shared with him, I said, oh, I would love to contribute to Working Conversations. And he looked at me and he said, anything you want to write, anyone you want to interview, I will publish it, or I will put up online, anything. You just do it. Just do it. I give you permission, you know, just, you know, anything you want. And no one has ever said that to me in that way with that intention.
Wow.
And it was one of those moments in my life that I look back and I just kind of bow and say, thank you, Richard, because he believed in me. And also for me, I think a lot of my journey has been around finding my voice. And mm-hmm. he just in that moment, it was so healing, so healing. So I'm grateful to Noble Friends. I'm grateful when I walk out the door each morning. I love my garden. It's not a big garden, but I greet the flowers and the trees and the plants, and I talk to them. You know, I love them, and I'm so grateful. And you know, I have a little cottage that I meditate in every morning, and I have this beautiful pine tree, and I just when I one morning I just looked up at the pine tree to kind of, you know, like, so grateful for you that you are holding this space for me. And I noticed the limbs are, they curve in like a hug around, the embrace around my cottage. And I was like, oh my gosh, how did I ever miss this? Like, there's so much beauty and there's so much that I just feel so grateful for this journey. I think that's really the answer is I feel really grateful, really, really grateful. And it's really interesting because I don't have that sense of, like, some people are like, what's on your bucket list? You want to travel all over the world or you want to do this? I don't have that. I feel so grateful just to be here. Like, everything is here. So I feel that's a great life blessing too, not to feel like I have to go anywhere or do anything, but just being here is enough. It's more than enough. It's everything.
Wow. I'm going to let that one sink in for a moment. That was wonderful. And we do have a couple of people in queue, and I just want to sit with that for a second, though. I think it's just so beautiful. And so for those of you, too, that are on the call, just remember it's *6 or ask@servicebase.org. And we're going to go to our first question.
Hi, this is Arya in Half Moon Bay. Anne and Audrey and Nicole, beautiful to listen to all of you. Anne, in the midst of all of everything you've been sharing about your journey, about beauty, about all of these wonderful stories, you just gave one mention that what you do is a curator. And I'm curious to hear you say a little more about that. I mean, what you do professionally, that is. And I'm curious to hear a little bit more about what do you do as a curator, and how does that relate to everything else you've been telling us about your journey?
It's a good question. Thank you, Arya. It's so good to hear your voice. My path professionally has been in the art world for as long as I can remember, since I was out of school. And I'll just mention one memory that I had is when I was in college, I was an English major and I had no idea what I wanted to do. You know, I just had these terrible visions of, oh, I'm going to be working in a bank someday, and that's really not what I want to do. And my mom kind of encouraged me to do a year abroad or study abroad. So I went to Paris, and I was just going to go for 6 months. But once I arrived there, I just fell in love with the city. And again, I felt like home in a way. And I stayed for 3 years. And I was fortunate to matriculate into the École du Louvre, which is this beautiful museum school mm-hmm. program. And I remember having this epiphany standing outside of the school one day, which is at the museum, and just all of a sudden it just hit me, oh my gosh, nothing is separate. Like everything is, oh my God, it just everything made sense. I can't even explain it, but all of a sudden just like all the different pieces of my life, everything just came to this point of, oh my gosh, I understand. And and since, you know, since that beautiful time in Paris where I was the only American in the school too, so I was truly on my own and I felt like I kind of grew up there. But when I came back to, you know, to the art world, you know, I had to get a job. So I worked in the galleries and I, you know, did all sorts of, but I always found myself, I loved working with the artists. I just loved working with the artists. So every job I found myself in, I would be, you know, helping put a show together or making the catalog or, you know, learning different aspects. And I love the idea of curating, but I didn't go to school to be a curator. I was just, you know, just found that within any job I had, I would just kind of naturally go there. So when I moved to San Francisco, it was like in 1990, I worked with this wonderful woman who was an art consultant, and she was doing these international art programs and with companies. And she hired me to be the exhibition's kind of coordinator and manager. And so I started working with the local artists and curating. And I just loved it because it was an opportunity to think of like what's kind of living out in the world at this time and what artists can kind of come together and share their vision. And so I would, you know, it was just and I didn't think about it, but yeah, it was another form of listening. And so I would be learning with the artists and it was really, I kind of sat back and just allowed, I remember even selecting the work, like, well, what would you want? What's important to you? And I felt that, you know, my role was really just to kind of orchestrate it a little bit and kind of bring it together. And now, you know, I worked as a consultant for many years and then I left. We had a fire in our home. And so I left the art world for like 8 years and rebuilt our, you know, our home. And Emily was just a baby at the time. And it was a time when I just, you know, had to step away from everything in terms of professionally and just focus on being a mom and focus on kind of, you know, how to kind of rebuild our lives. And it was a very powerful time. And I remember when, you know, after 8 years, I ran into a friend of mine from the art world, and she said, when are you going to get back to work? And we'd love to see you involved. And I said, I'm getting ready. But when I came back, the first show, I decided I didn't want to do what I did in the past. I didn't want to be an art consultant. I didn't want to work in corporations. I wanted to just work with artists, and I wanted to curate. I wanted to be a curator. So I went to the local theater in town, and they had beautiful. It's like Charlie Chaplin used to perform there, and they have this incredible music program and theater, but the arts were really, you know, kind of ho-hum. And so I walked right into the director and I said, I would love to curate a show here. And this is what I'd like to do. And I'll do it as a gift. And she said, okay. And so that was the first show I curated. And it was actually called The Landscape of War. And I was able to, it was an idea that Rebecca Solnit, a beautiful writer, had done a panel about it, and I asked her if I could curate a show on this theme, and it was very, very powerful, and it was so scary because I had never done anything like it, but I remember having, you know, many times where I just, you know, be in tears, like, what am I doing? How did I get myself into this? But it was one of those times where I really stretched, and I stepped beyond my comfort zone, and it was it was such a powerful time because the artists were there to help me install, and it was just like we were all in this together. And what I love about curating is it's not just, you know, finding artists and sharing their beautiful work in the world. It's about a conversation. It's about, you know, we learn from each other and the kinds of relationships that develop and the what we learn from each, I guess the learnings and the programming, and it's so rich. So I feel really, really grateful because I just feel like I'm constantly learning. And I've been really, really blessed to work with amazing artists and museums that just have given me the freedom to just kind of create, create what I felt was, give me the freedom. And that's really a blessing to have that kind of freedom.
You know, Anne, as I'm listening to you, I have this picture in my mind of on one side is you in the Redwoods, and on the other side is you at the Louvre. And they're totally connected. And what you're doing in both places is the same thing. You're listening.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I had a very similar image in my head too. And it's beautiful. I wanted to, when you were speaking, very, very, very similar image. And I just imagine you that the art is this area for you to practice the curation of the magic that goes on that you see and in your life, and so that it spills out. I can just from all your stories, it's just spilling out that muscle is activated in all parts of your life, and it's just wonderful to see how it's all connected. And I wanted to share a bit of gratitude from Kozo, who is not able to be here today, but he just wanted to give you some gratitude for the power of love that you give through your eyes and your act of kindness and your being. So I just wanted to add that in.
Thank you. Thank you. Kozo is a great force of love and a beautiful teacher of surrender, too. So such deep gratitude back to Kozo.
Yeah, we're going to go to our next caller.
Hi, Annie with the smiling eyes. Hi, everybody. This is your friend Mish talking to you from Brooklyn, New York.
Oh, good morning, Mish.
Good morning. I, too, wanted to express my gratitude to you for sharing yourself with us today, and it's been delightful, and I've been teary off and on listening to you speak. And a memory of you from Bolinas that will stay with me always is when, I don't know if you remember this, noble friends was a term that was new to me, and I asked you quietly, I kind of whispered, what is a noble friend? Can you tell me? And you took my hands, and you looked in my eyes, and you just gave such a beautiful expression of what a noble friend is to me, and it has stayed with me for a long time. And I just want to thank you for you just have a love presence, and you exude love, and that's why people are so comfortable around you, and it shines through your eyes. And that's what I wanted to share with you. And I'm sending you a big hug. I hope you can feel
it. I can feel it. It's so warm, and thank you.
Mindy and I think we're excited about your call as we were about ours. We've been talking about it all week, like Saturday is Annie's call, and oh, yes. And thank you so much and love you.
Oh, thank you, and I love you too. And also wanted to share that with Mindy that I've been making your beautiful peace doves, and how your tutorial online was so beautiful, and I keep finding myself playing it over and over to just hear your voice.
Mindy's
so thank you.
Her peace dove mission. Thank you, Annie.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you both. We have a couple of online comments and questions. the first one's coming in from Jackie, And she says, in light of all the suffering in the world, and we don't have to look past the current political primaries, how do you keep such a positive outlook? Do you just figure that it'll all unfold as it needs to, or do you feel a kind of responsibility on your shoulders? And if it's the latter, how do you, and I think if you hold, if it's the latter, how do you hold it all while still keeping a kind heart?
Yeah. Well, that's the beauty of our hearts, is that it's really, you know, the heart is vast. And the heart, I mean, I've had moments in meditation where I'm almost overwhelmed by the vastness of the heart and how the heart can hold, you know, hold it all. It can really, you know, the pain, it can hold the joy. And I feel like, you know, I've thought a lot about this, you know, because I feel really grateful to, you know, to have so much joy in my life. But I feel like the joy comes because I'm also able to hold the pain. And, you know, in my, you know, in terms of, you know, just day to day and the current climate is a really challenging one. But I also, I feel that every morning I feel blessed, and this is really a blessing that I have the space and I have the ability to sit every morning. And so every morning, you know, I'll sit and that just grounds me in such a beautiful place and opens me to a place that, you know, where I can be very, I can listen and trust. And I just, you know, I trust that more and more what I'm called to do, I trust that I can be an instrument in that way. And we all can. And I think the beauty of a community of service-based and noble friends is we can hold each other through the difficult times and through the joyful times. But it's, you know, life is very rich and sometimes it doesn't make sense. But, you know, I guess my gratitude is that it's just so much more. It's so much bigger than us that I just have to bow to the mystery of it all.
Wow. Yeah. it is a mystery, and it's fun to be on that in that space sometimes, no matter if it's up or down or just kind of like surfing, I guess.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, it's something that I think about too is, you know, I try to think about this every day, and that is, you know, what is that action for me that's going to really, what's my edge? Like, where's my edge?
Right.
And you know, one of my, I would say, challenges is that in my life I feel like I've been very careful. And so I have to really listen. Am I being careful? Is that wisdom to hold back, or is that because I'm careful and I'm scared? Is that fear? Like what is that? And I'm grateful for the space of silence to really have that inner inquiry, because it's you know, especially in this world, what it is challenging. It's like where am, you know, what is needed of me, and am I really listening?
Right.
And it's not even, it's actually not even what is needed of me. It's more about just that inner knowing, I guess, listening to that inner knowing.
I'm going to move us to a little bit of a different question, but I have a feeling there's going to be some connections there. And this is from Garrett online as well. And says, Anne, you love animals and they have been among your most profound teachers. Do you think that human consciousness is higher than that of animals, as many religions seem to suggest? And I'm gonna, there's a few more follow-up questions, and I'm going to let you answer that
okay.
one first.
Okay, all right. Well, I'm actually looking at a beautiful picture of Garuda. I call her this beautiful female hawk that has come to visit me. And it's amazing because I was in my bedroom one morning and we had these, you know, kind of glass doors that look outside in the deck. And all of a sudden, this really large red-shouldered hawk was just sitting on the railing. I've never seen a hawk land on a home. And I just immediately sat to the ground and just kind of sat in receptive silence with her. And she would look at me, and then she'd look away, and she'd look back at me. But what was astounding to me was her eyes were so loving. And then she flew away. And I remember I immediately called Steve Carlin and said, "Steve, you know, I had this beautiful visit from a hawk, you know, and what kind of hawk was this? You know, it was like, it's not a red tail because it had all these beautiful spots." And he said, "Oh, that's a red-shouldered hawk." And I said, "Well, she was so, you know," and I don't know why, but it just was really clear that it was a female. And she was so beautiful. I said, "Well, just open to her. Just open to her. She, you know, just open." So she would come every so often. She'd come and land on the deck, and I'd happen to be in my room, and I'd just sit down on the floor, and we'd just sit together. And then I realized I would come into my, I would get up at 5:30 in the morning before the kids got up, and I would come sit, and I would, you know, it was dark, so I'd open the door, the kitchen door, to come out to the cottage, and she would call. And she would always call at the most auspicious times. And she would sometimes land on the telephone pole right above where my cottage is and just sit. And so we had this relationship, but it was very clear not to try to rationalize it. I just was grateful. And I knew that, you know, hawks and medicine are messengers. And they're messengers from, you know, I consider them like divine messengers. So I knew there was a message coming, and I didn't know what it was, and it didn't matter. I just knew there was a divine message, and I needed to listen. And every time I heard her cry, I would just, a joy would just kind of, you know, kind of emanate out from within me. I love her. And what I've, so I don't want to get caught up in that story, so I want to just also share what the animals have taught me is when we sit in silence and we're quiet, you know, we kind of, you know, our energy gets low and goes in, then we are actually communing with the animal world. That is where they commune. And that's why we, you know, Marvin could hear the condor answer his questions, because he opened his heart and he was in a quiet space. And so, you know, I think we're able to almost, you know, ask permission to open to their consciousness. Because it's not a human, and that's what Steve is very, you know, has been a wonderful teacher. You know, when we're with a wild animal, it is, you know, we can't objectify it or, you know, try to rationalize from a human perspective. It is an animal consciousness. But if we can quiet ourselves and be really, you know, kind of in a meditative state where our mind is quiet, we can meet that animal. And they enjoy our presence as much as we enjoy their presence. And that was a profound teaching for me. And when we invited a little puppy into our home, into our lives, you know, I would let our little puppy Gus come. He wanted to come into the cottage with me. So I let him come in, and while I was meditating, I was astounded every time. You know, he was this puppy with tons of energy. He would just quiet down. He would sit right next to me, and he would just quiet down. And we would sit together for an hour at a time. And I was amazed, like, oh, my goodness. He doesn't get up. He doesn't, like, smell around the cottage. He doesn't, you know, he's not curious. He just settles. So I realized, you know, our relationship has, you know, and it's been extraordinary. So he's been this beautiful teacher to me, too. So we can absolutely, and I feel like we've always had the ability to commune with the land and with the animals. It's just that we've lost that that knowing. We don't remember.
Right.
And so I feel like the animal world is a beautiful teacher for us to remind us of our connection to nature, to remind us of that we are not separate. And Garuda has been a blessing in my life and a very, very powerful teacher. And I light a candle for her every day.
Wow. Right as you started speaking, Steve actually wrote a little thing, web form, saying, "Please tell the story of your hawk friend." And as you were starting. It was wonderful.
Yeah. Well, I'll just share one more other piece about Garuda, because this is extraordinary. So the kids and George, my beloved husband, kind of laugh at me sometimes because of my relationship with the hawk. And one day I was making dinner. It was summertime. No, it was actually April. It was April, spring. There was this beautiful spring evening, and George was gonna barbecue out on our barbecue deck. We was a tiny little deck off our kitchen, and the doors were open, and Peter was doing homework at the dining table, and all of a sudden Peter says, "Mom, your hawk's here." I was like, "What?" And Garuda had landed on our little barbecue deck, which is tiny, just like this little, and she was just sitting on the ledge there, and I thought, oh, so I walked right after her, and I'm literally, 12 inches from her, and I said, "Garuda, what is the, wow, what is the honor of your presence?" And she was just standing there, and she was, just completely just, not afraid of my close presence or the family. And then her mate came down and flew to our deck above. And Peter said, "I'm going to go up and spend some time with the hawk upstairs." So he went up, and he took my camera, actually, went upstairs and just sat with a hawk with her mate up on our deck. And then Garuda stayed where she was. And our neighbors came out of their house, and they're like, "Oh, my gosh, I can't believe these hawks are landing on your house. This is crazy." And I'm like, I know, isn't this beautiful? And they were with us for like a half an hour, and then they flew off. And then 2 weeks later, I got a call from a dear friend who we were studying with, a dear teacher, spiritual teacher, Angela Arian, who is a teacher of Steve Carlin, a very dear friend of Steve's, and also John Malloy and Mia and some many others in service space. And she had passed unexpectedly. And I had this thought later, oh my gosh, she passed 2 weeks ago when Garuda and her mate arrived. And I look back to my, camera, where we had taken where Peter had taken a picture, and it was the same day, the day she passed. So, who knows, right?
Right.
But they are beautiful messengers, and Angela, when you lose a teacher while you're studying with a teacher, her beautiful colleague, Laudrin, had said to us after Angela had passed, is that when you lose a teacher when you're studying with her, you never really lose her. Like, she'll be with you.
Right.
And I feel that with Angela. I feel that very strongly. So, beautiful blessing. Yeah, but the animal world is, there's so much, and they're just, as I said, they enjoy our relationship as much as we enjoy theirs.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that, and it's such a beautiful reminder for many of us to kind of just listen in those ways for those connections. It is time to kind of move along with our days, and I have our final question, which is, how can we as the larger service based community support you in any way?
Oh, you have beyond my wildest dreams. It's been the biggest blessing, and I just feel so grateful to all the beautiful souls of service based, and I guess I would say just enjoy nature. The there's so many blessings and gifts around us, our youth, and don't be afraid to step beyond your comfort zone, because what lies beyond our comfort zone is really extraordinary.
Yeah.
So thank you for this call, and thank you for all the beautiful questions, and just to be in this space. It's a real blessing to me. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so very much for sharing all your stories and learnings and magic.
And can I just say a quick thank you? I wanted to say a quick thank you to Mia, because about 6 months ago, I was supposed to be on the call, and there were some family situations that were up, and it was just not the right time for me. And Mia actually stepped in and did the call without any preparation, and so beautifully. And that's noble friendship. So I just want to send my love and gratitude to Mia for her willingness to say yes.
Absolutely. So thank you, and thank Audrey. And we're going to end in a collective moment of silence and gratitude. And once we're finished with that, we're going to open up the line for a collective gratitude out loud together. So, and on the count of three, we're going to offer our thank you to Ann Bay. So one, two, three.
Thank you, Anne.
Thank you. Have a beautiful day.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to a recording of Awaken Calls. To access archives, visit us at www.awaken.org. And to get more involved, volunteer at www.servicespace.org.